So the seventh chapter in the Yoga of Divine Love, titled The Ananda Brahman, appeared on the 15th of October in 1918. Today, I think, is the 17th of October, at least here in America. The music that we just listened to was from a date very nearby as well, in 1954. Oh, pardon me, 1962. Or three. But it's a month full of richness for us. Ananda. The concept of delight. So on the opening of this issue in the Arya, we see first the Life Divine's entry, four theories of existence, and then the Gita has now displaced the synthesis of yoga and appears in position number two, and that chapter was the Supreme Divine. You remember only a couple of chapters ago, we worked through the Divine Personality in the synthesis of yoga. So now, having come from the delight of the divine, we look at the Ananda Brahman, clearly a continuation of the same theme. Sri Aurobindo begins, "The way of devotion in the integral synthetic yoga will take the form of a seeking after the divine through love and delight, and a seizing with joy on all the ways of his being. It will find its acme in a perfect union of love and a perfect enjoyment of all the ways of the soul's intimacy with God." So he has laid stress on the idea that this yoga is to achieve oneness. That's what integrality is. An integer is one. A synthesis is that which takes a number of elements and brings together into a single compass. It composes the many into oneness. So he's using the quest of the spirit for love and delight to achieve this integration. It may start from knowledge, or it may start from works, but it will then turn knowledge into a joy of luminous union with the being of the beloved, and turn works into a joy of the active union of our being with the will and the power of being of the beloved. Or it may start directly from love and delight. It will then take both these other things into itself and will develop them as part of the complete joy of oneness. The beginning of the heart's attraction to the divine may be impersonal. The touch of an impersonal joy in something universal or transcendent that has revealed itself directly or indirectly to our emotional or our aesthetic being or to our capacity of spiritual felicity. So he speaks of an enlargement beyond self-focus into the universal, into the transcendent, but this very much deals with how we feel. Not how we regard and think from a distance, but something that is in contact with us intimately. That which we thus grow aware of is the Ananda Brahman, the bliss existence. Ananda means bliss, delight, translated into English, but there's first the word nanda in Sanskrit, which means pleasure, enjoyment, joy. but the awe that precedes it means this goes beyond. And indeed, when we look at what we call the Bliss Upanishad, the Taittiriya Upanishad, when it starts extolling the difference between what is our mere pleasure and what is the nature of ananda, the meager possibilities of arithmetic and mathematics can't do justice to how enormous is that experience. It seems to swell larger than the cosmos, seems to exceed all determination. So I refer you to that Upanishad, as I frequently do. So ananda means it strengthens the meaning of pleasure and joy, something which is superlative, which is beyond measurement, but which is utter delight, unmixed, unwalled, unabrogated. There is an adoration of an impersonal delight and beauty, of a pure and an infinite perfection to which we can give no name or form, a moved attraction of the soul to some ideal and infinite presence, power, existence in the world or beyond it, which in some way becomes psychologically or spiritually sensible to us, and then more and more intimate and real. That is the call, the touch of the bliss existence upon us. Well, it is a truth that's at the heart even of Advaita Vedanta, because it is in pursuit of Chit Ananda. Maybe it doesn't see Sat Chit Ananda in early terminology, but it does understand what is the consciousness of delight. And that leaving this triple world of ignorance behind and plunging into the innate and abiding essence of the only reality gives one freedom from limited sensation and throws one into what is immarginate. It is without margin. There's a citation we could draw attention to from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which is in the third chapter. It's a very long Upanishad, the longest, the ninth subsection, and the 28th verse. And a subsection of that would be subverse 7. And it says, Brahman, who is knowledge, is bliss. And Brahman, who is knowledge, and who is bliss, is the destination of one who dynamically offers gifts, self, energy, work, as well as of him who stands firm and knows, who sits in an asana, who stands like a mountain and is unmoved, piercing behind every appearance, seeing only the real. But both reveal Brahman. Knowledge and bliss are one in that all-encompassing reality. Vijnanam Anandam Brahma. Again, that is the call, the touch of the bliss existence upon us. Then, to have always the joy and nearness of its presence, to know what it is, so as to satisfy the intellect and the intuitional mind of its constant reality, to put our passive, and so far as we can manage it, our active, our inner immortal and even our outer mortal being into perfectly into perfect harmony with it grow into a necessity of our living. So here's that oneness, disclosing the soul from within, what Sri Aurobindo will later call the psychic being. And bring all the equipment, the aesthetic, the emotional, the intellectual, everything must come into that. And then he says, and to open ourselves to it is what we feel to be the one true happiness, to live into it, the sole real perfection. So again, we're back to the all-effacing single aspiration. Nothing else distracts. That only, to see the one in all things, to abide in the one at all times, and to live into it means a dynamic expression, an expansion of that felt communion into all the parts of the nature, into all the activities of our mind, all emotional states, every experience, none excluded. You see, that's the real perfection, and it's endless because we can't achieve that all at once. He continues, a transcendent bliss, unimaginable and inexpressible by the mind and speech, is the nature of the ineffable. That's Taittiriya Upanishad 2:4:1. Worth reading in English. The delight of the eternal, from which words turn away without attaining, and the mind also returns baffled. Who knows the delight of the eternal? He shall fear naught, now or hereafter. Aprapya manasa saha anandam brahmano vidvan. That broods imminent and secret in the whole universe and in everything in the universe. Its presence is described as a secret ether of the bliss of being, of which the scripture says that if this were not, none could for a moment breathe or live. Taittiriya Upanishad 2:7:1. And Sri Aurobindo's rendering. In the beginning, all this universe was non-existent and unmanifest, from which this manifest existence was born, back to the life divine. Itself created itself, none other created it. Therefore, they say of it, the well and beautifully made. Lo, this that is well and beautifully made, verily it is no other than the delight behind existence. When he has got him this delight, then it is that this creation becomes a thing of bliss. For who could labor to draw in the breath, or who could have strength to breathe it out, if there were not that bliss in the heaven of his heart, the ether within his being? It is he that is the fountain of bliss. For when the spirit that is within us finds the invisible, bodiless, undefinable, and unhoused eternal, his refuge and firm foundation, then He has passed beyond the reach of fear. But when the spirit that is within us makes for himself even a little difference in the eternal, then he has fear. Yes, the eternal himself becomes a terror to such a knower who thinks not. And while we're talking about this secret ether of bliss and this being imminent and secret in the whole universe, I may as well read to you now a quotation. This one from the Mundaka Upanishad. 2.2.12 All this is Brahman immortal. Nothing else. Brahman is in front of us. Brahman behind us. And to the south of us. And to the north of us. And below us. And above us. It stretches everywhere. All this is only Brahman. All this magnificent, shining universe. So let's read that last sentence again. And this spiritual bliss is here also in our hearts. You remember that Sri Aurobindo later would identify the true nature of the psychic being, our inmost soul, to make it brief, as a drop of honey in the heart. Or you could say behind the heart, a spark born from that immortal fire, thrown here on a journey and adventure that is ceaseless and ceaselessly grows. That spiritual bliss is here also in our hearts because it's our very essence. It is for the purpose of delight that the soul has enjoined itself to this cosmic labor. It is hidden in from the toil of the surface mind, which catches only at weak and flawed translations of it into various mental, vital, and physical forms of the joy of existence. But if the mind has once grown sufficiently subtle and pure in its receptions, and not limited by the grosser nature of our outward responses to existence, we can take a reflection of it which will wear perhaps wholly or predominantly the hue of whatever is strongest in our nature. It may present itself first as a yearning for some universal beauty which we feel in nature and man and in all that is around us. Or we may have the intuition of some transcendent beauty, of which all apparent beauty here is only a symbol. That is how it may come to those in whom the aesthetic being is developed and insistent, and the instincts which, when they find form of expression, make the poet and artist are predominant. Or it may be the sense of a divine spirit of love, or else a helpful and compassionate infinite presence in the universe or behind or beyond it, which responds to us when we turn the need of our spirit towards it. So it may first show itself when the emotional being is intensely developed. It may come near to us in other ways, but always as a power or presence of delight, beauty, love, or peace, which touches the mind, but is beyond the forms these things take ordinarily in the mind. For all joy, beauty, love, peace, delight, are outflowings from the Ananda Brahman. All delight of the spirit, the intellect, the imagination, aesthetic sense, ethical aspiration and satisfaction, action, life, the body. And through all ways of our being, the divine can touch us and make use of them to awaken and liberate the spirit. But to reach the Ananda Brahman in itself, the mental reception of it must be subtleized, spiritualized, universalized, discharged of everything that is turbid and limiting. Remindful of passages in his little book, The Mother. We have to refine and reinforce the mental instrument to be able to touch that. For when we draw quite near or enter into it, it is by an awakened spiritual sense of a transcendent and a universal delight which exists within and yet behind and beyond the contradictions of the world, and to which we can unite ourselves through a growing universal and spiritual or a transcendental ecstasy. So that delight pictures itself in the world, and we can find it really here, or we can leave behind the confines of space and time and realize Ananda above, transcendently. Ordinarily, the mind is satisfied with reflecting this infinity we perceive, or with feeling the sense of it within and without us, as an experience, which, however frequent, yet remains exceptional. I'm leaning towards calling attention to modern Western thinkers, psychologists, and mystics who have the sense that there is no final realization. There is an awakening in bright experiences to what this reality is, but none can make that a constant in their conscious being. Sri Aurobindo, Sri Ramakrishna, Sri Ramana Maharshi are three grand examples of those who, whatever they may be doing or saying, whatever they may be writing, whether they're having their lunch, whether they're speaking to disciples, whether they're sitting alone in deep concentration, never stepped outside the realization that had been secure. Always they were aware of the divine presence. So we take some distinction from Maurice Bucky, Carl Jung, Roberto Assagioli in that respect, recognizing the value of their work otherwise. It seems in itself so satisfying and wonderful when it comes and our ordinary mind and the active life which we have to lead may seem to us so incompatible with it that we may think it excessive to expect anything more. But the very spirit of yoga is this, to make the exceptional normal, and to turn that which is above us and greater than our normal selves into our own constant consciousness. Therefore, we should not hesitate to open ourselves more steadily to whatever experience of the infinite we have, to purify and intensify it, to make it our object of constant thought and contemplation, till it becomes the originating power that acts in us, the Godhead we adore and embrace. Our whole being is put into tune with it, and it is made the very self of our being. This is a reversal of motivation, where the divine will displaces the human, where real being displaces what seems to be evanescent, where a sublime consciousness now regards from this poise in humanity. In all three notes, consciousness, power, delight are housed in real being here, in time, in space, in your form, because you, as a yogin, yogini, have achieved. I think we'll put a bookmark there and finish this wonderful chapter next week with your permission and turn to sophistry. If I am able to croak out a few more words, I'd like to go to book two, the book of the Traveler of the Worlds, canto five, the Godheads of the Little Life. Don't let that mislead you. We'll start on page 170. A work is done in the deep silences. A glory and wonder of spiritual sense, a laughter in beauty's everlasting space, transforming world experience into joy, inhabit the mystery of the untouched gulfs. Lulled by time's beats, eternity sleeps in us. In the sealed hermetic heart, the happy core, unmoved behind this outer shape of death, the eternal entity prepares within its matter of divine felicity, its reign of heavenly phenomenon. Even in our skeptic mind of ignorance, a foresight comes of some immense release. Our will lifts towards it slow and shaping hands. Each part in us desires its absolute. Our thoughts covet the everlasting light. Our strength derives from an omnipotent force, and sense from a veiled God joy the worlds were made, and since eternal beauty asks for form, even here, where all is made of being's dust, our hearts are captured by ensnaring shapes, our very senses blindly seek for bliss. Our error crucifies reality to force its birth and divine body here, compelling incarnate in a human form and breathing in limbs that one can touch and clasp, its knowledge to rescue an ancient ignorance, its savior light, the inconscient universe. And when that greater self comes sea-like down to fill this image of our transience, all shall be captured by delight, transformed. In waves of undreamed ecstasy shall roll our mind and life and sense, and laugh in a light other than this hard, limited human day, the body's tissues thrill apotheosized, its cells sustain bright metamorphosis. This little being of time, this shadow soul, this living dwarf figurehead of darkened spirit, out of its traffic in petty dreams shall rise. Its shape of person and its ego face, divested of this mortal travesty, like a clay troll kneaded into a god, new made in the image of the eternal guest, it shall be caught to the breast of a white force, and flaming with a paradisal touch, in a rose fire of sweet spiritual grace, in the red passion of its infinite change, quiver, awake, and shudder with ecstasy. As if reversing a deformation spell, released from the black magic of the night, renouncing servitude to the dim abyss, it shall learn at last who lived within unseen, and seized with marvel in the adoring heart, to the enthroned child godhead kneel aware, trembling with beauty and delight and love. But first, the spirit's ascent we must achieve out of the chasm from which our nature rose. The soul must soar sovereign above the form and climb to summits beyond mind's half-sleep. Our hearts we must inform with heavenly strength, surprise the animal with the occult god. Then, kindling the gold tongue of sacrifice, calling the powers of a bright hemisphere, we shall shed the discredit of our mortal state, make the abysm a road for heaven's descent, acquaint our depths with the supernal ray, and cleave the darkness with the mystic fire. Namaste. Jai Ma.